Translation. O Brahmins, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. The list of incarnations of the personality of God given herein is not complete. It is only a partial view of all the incarnations. There are many others, such as Sri Hayagriva, Hari, Hamsa, Prishnigarbha, Vibhu, Satyasena, Vaikuntha, Sarvabhauma, Vishvaksena, Dharmashetu, Sudama, Yogeshvara, Brihadbanu, and others of the bygone ages. Sri Prahlad Maharaj said in his prayer, "My Lord, you manifest as many incarnations as there are species of life, namely the aquatics, the vegetables, the reptiles, the birds, the beasts, the men, the demigods, etc., just for the maintenance of the faithful and for the annihilation of the unfaithful. You advent yourself in this way in accordance with the necessity of the different yugas. In Kali Yuga you have incarnated garbed as a devotee." This incarnation of the Lord in the Kali Yuga is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are many other places, both in the Bhagavatam and in other scriptures, in which the incarnation of the Lord as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explicitly mentioned. In the Brahma Samhita also it is said indirectly that although there are many incarnations of the Lord, such as Rama, Narsingha, Varaha, Matsya, Kurma, and many others, the Lord himself sometimes incarnates in person. Lord Krishna and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are not, therefore, incarnations, but the original source of all other incarnations. This will be clearly explained in the next shloka. So the Lord is the inexhaustible source for innumerable incarnations, which are not always mentioned, but such incarnations are distinguished by specific extraordinary feats which are impossible to be performed by any living being. That is the general test to identify an incarnation of the Lord, directly and indirectly empowered. Some incarnations mentioned above are almost plenary portions. For instance, the Kumaras are empowered with transcendental knowledge. Sri Narada is empowered with devotional service. Maharaj Prithu is an empowered incarnation with executive function. The Matsya incarnation is directly a plenary portion. So the innumerable incarnations of the Lord are manifested all over the universes, constantly, without cessation, as water flows constantly from waterfalls. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militanjena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanshikalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Panitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So I'll just read that translation. O Brahmins, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, he quotes Prahlad Maharaj saying that the Lord incarnates in many different species of life. And there's a quote by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he mentions the vegetable tribes. Anyone ever came across a tribe of vegetables? You ever seen a tribe of vegetables? So he says, the Gaudiya literature will not remain confined to the Bengali-speaking people. It will in a short time expand and display its full brilliancy through the medium of all the languages, including those of birds, beasts, and the vegetable tribes. So, I don't have much insight into how vegetable tribes learn Bengali. But it's saying here the Lord's appearing in all species of life, so he's there for a reason in the particular species. How he communicates that, is inconceivable. But then there's a lot of things, isn't there? A lot of things are inconceivable, actually. It's just that we get used to the fact that the sky is blue. But the fact is, it is inconceivable that the sky is blue. But we just, you've got to get on with things, right? You can't stand there in the middle of the road waiting to do your Tesco shopping, saying, wow, that sky is blue, why is it blue? So actually there's a lot of things. The fact that we exist is inconceivable, but we just have to get on with things, don't we? So I've got a question for everyone. Can anyone give a reason why Srila Prabhupada has emphasized Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya in giving his explanation of the translation? So there's a question. Why? Because if you read the, Brahman's incarnations of the Lord, innumerable, the rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water, and Prabhupada mentions, Hayagriva, Hari, Hamsa, Prishnigalba, and then as soon as he quotes Prahlad Maharaj, then he's straight in there with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. And he's distinguishing them as being different. Yes, Matini. Yeah, that's one reason, yeah. The basic theme is to emphasize the Krishna. I was just wondering in terms of the actual translation, why is it that Srila Prabhupada immediately jumps on the fact that Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are not ordinary incarnations? Why would that be? Yeah, he's directly the Supreme Lord. I'm just wondering what the connection is. And I mean, can you? So an interesting connection is that in the translation it's referring to rivulets and inexhaustible sources of water. So then Prabhupada's expanding upon a reservoir of water, yeah. Yes, exactly, yeah. Everyone get that? So a rivulet is different from an inexhaustible source of water, although in one sense it's the same, isn't it? The rivulet is just coming out from the water, so it's none different. But actually, inexhaustible source of water is Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. And the rivulets that are flowing from the inexhaustible sources of water are Hari, Hamsa, Prishnigarbha, Vibhu, Satyasena, Vaikuntha, Sava, Bhoma, Bhikshu. So Prabhupada's showing how in the translation what it's referring to there is the Supreme Lord himself and then the incarnations which come from the Lord, and then the distinction between the two, that one is an inexhaustible source and one is coming from that inexhaustible source. So it's important for us to appreciate also that Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are being emphasized, like Mataji was saying, because it's very rare that they appear. So Prabhupada's also choosing this occasion to celebrate the fact that we're very, very near the incarnation of Lord Chaitanya, especially. So, another question. Prabhupada saying the Lord is incarnating innumerable forms and species for the maintenance of the faithful and for the annihilation of the unfaithful. So, why is it important for us to understand? Why is that? Prabhupada's quoting Prahlad Maharaj that he comes in all these different incarnations for the maintenance of the faithful and for the annihilation of the unfaithful. So, why is it important for us to understand that the Lord comes for these two reasons? What is it important for us to understand? Maybe it's not that important. Yes, Mataji?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the... it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada... Well, it's Prahlad Maharaj referring to faithful and unfaithful. So this seems to be the criterion for whether you're going to be maintained or whether you're going to be annihilated. So your faith is a very important way of assessing how much of a devotee you are, because there are ways that we assess, I mean, a very superficial way of assessing who is a good devotee is who has a really neat dhoti on, and he's wearing a pair of trousers, he's not as advanced as him, and he has a silk dhoti, so he must be an uttama adhikari. There was one devotee actually, he couldn't get anything right, he was doing everything he did was, and he wouldn't get up for Mangal Aarti, and he was always late, and he was lazy. And they complained to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this guy is useless. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, but he always puts his dhoti on very nicely, have you noticed? He always has a very nice dhoti. And so as the years went by and he kept putting his dhoti on, he became a really good devotee. And there's also that story of there was somebody that they nicknamed Pigpen in the early days with Srila Prabhupada, and Pigpen would never get out of, well, he would get out of his sleeping bag, but only to consume some prasadam, then he would disappear back into his sleeping bag. And the devotees wanted to throw him out. And Prabhupada said, you cannot tolerate? And he said, oh yes, Prabhupada, yes, we can. Yeah, of course we can tolerate, Prabhupada. So, and then years later, this devotee became the that famous scholar whose name slips me right now. Yeah, Kushikrata. And he went on to translate books and do so much valuable service. So, so it's hard sometimes to be able to detect the devotee's level of faith. So you have to be a little bit careful who you're rubbing shoulders. Who knows? It could be Narada Muni dressed up as a devotee. There's one. There's a nice book called Avatar, and it's all pastimes of Prabhupada, and it's illustrated by Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhu. And there's one story. You see this man in a bowler hat and suit with an umbrella and a briefcase, and the devotees were apologizing to Prabhupada that not many turned up for the festival. And Prabhupada said, oh, Narada Muni was there, but he was dressed up as a businessman so that nobody would recognize him. So it can be hard. And in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami, Drishtai Svabhava, Janateya Vapasas Tadoshina, Naprakritatam, Hiyabhakta, Janasya Pajye, that you should see, you should overlook a devotee's infirmities, being born with an infirm body or bad complexion. Like the Ganges has bubbles in it, but those advanced in knowledge will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. So how to overlook a devotee's superficial anomalies and see, well, what's his service like, what's his faith like? So how you could detect a devotee's level of faith, oh, yeah, okay. So so that's why I've done it that way. Okay, yeah, so there's two questions. Yeah, so back to the first question, I'm sorry. This was, the first question was about how Srila Prabhupada emphasizes Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. So I had a few answers for that, actually, which was just to share with the devotees, was... by Prabhupada showing how there's different incarnations, it counters the assumption some atheists make that God, if he does exist, doesn't do much to help us. So that is one of the arguments that atheists like to make, that, you know, you're talking about God and you're running around saying you believe in God and everything, but there are so many problems in the world. So to counter that argument, we see there's so many incarnations of God appearing, and not only in the human species or on this planet, but in many species and on many planets, all for the maintenance. So it's an important point to understand how the Lord is doing that. And again, from Bhaktisiddhanta, he goes into explaining how the Lord cares for the devotees. So he's speaking specifically here about Lord Chaitanya. He says, whatever drawback may come, we will accept it as the Lord manifesting in the form of mercy. It defies description how much Sri Chaitanya has arranged for our welfare. We are on the path of material enjoyment, to open our eyes, he orchestrates that certain obstacles appear, stage by stage, among the objects of attachment. He gave me bad health, and step by step, gave me accidents. He gave a specific, transitory nature to all things to help put us on the spiritual path. So that's the mood of a devotee. He has an attitude of gratitude, and that's Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not thinking of Krishna and then wondering why things are going wrong, and I've got a problem with this, and this is a problem, and that's a problem. Krishna consciousness means appreciating how Krishna is there all the time. Maybe we don't see Krishna's face, but at least we should be seeing Krishna's hand and what's going on around us. It also helps us to broaden our appreciation for other worshippers of different aspects of God. So if you see there's all these different incarnations coming down at particular times with particular processes, for people of a particular nature or a particular species, so there has to be some system employed for them. And it may not be the one that's appropriate for you, but then it helps us to appreciate that there's many different systems and paths that are being provided by the Lord. And then, like Mataji was saying, it helps us to appreciate the special opportunity that we've been afforded, that Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya have appeared just around the corner. One day of Brahma is 1,000 Kali Yugas. So in terms of Lord Brahma's day, then Lord Chaitanya's been here just a few minutes ago, so it's very, very recent indeed. And then it makes us aware of the cosmic strategy that the Lord endeavors and is scheming to bring us back in whatever condition we have fallen to. So, I mean, it's quite a fallen condition to be in the body of a carrot or in a vegetable tribe, but the Lord doesn't see that. He just sees that we're the soul, and he's making an arrangement for us to come back to him. So then on the other point about faith and why the faithful and the unfaithful, the maintenance of the faithful and the annihilation of the unfaithful. So for me, that's a little scary, because sometimes my faith wavers and I'm thinking, oh, maybe I'm up for annihilation now. You know, I'm marginal. I'm just on the good side. But then I've slipped, and today I'm feeling pretty demoniac. And I'm feeling really unfaithful. Maybe I'll get the thunderbolt thrown upon me. So that could be scary. So in Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, Shiva Ramaj makes a nice point about faith. He says, the gusty winds of Maya may indeed toss novices about on the ocean of pure devotion, causing them to slip at times and even engage in sinful acts. Regardless, such devotees, even though neophytes, are known as pure devotees due to their implicit faith in Krishna's order to abandon selfish religions and to serve him alone. So it's interesting, if we stop judging devotees according to the externals, which we try to see the faith that they have, then we can also do the same to ourselves. But if our mind is accustomed to finding fault and then condemning, then that same mind will come back when we slip and we make a fault, and then we'll be getting the condemnation. Who do you think you are? You call yourself a devotee? You've just eaten a cream bun and you didn't even offer it. Who do you? You can't show your face again in the association of Vaishnavas. So it helps if we can appreciate what is the important aspect for a devotee, which is his faith. And that again comes up in this is quoted from the Nectar of Devotion. Lord Chaitanya followers emphatically argue that pure faith and devotion are not dependent on work, knowledge, and meditation. Srila Rupa Goswami says, knowledge and renunciation may sometimes be useful while a devotee is entering the initial stages of devotion, but they can never be said to be the limbs of bhakti. So knowledge and renunciation are not the limbs of bhakti. In other words, neither knowledge nor renunciation enhances pure faith. To the contrary, pure faith gives life to karma and jnana. Therefore, it cannot be dependent on them. Pure faith, and pure faith alone, is the self-sufficient prerequisite for pure devotion. So that's a very important commodity to have, pure faith. And it's not so difficult to gain pure faith if you get the association of Ekantika devotees, and that's mentioned also in the Sudabhati Chintamani. How can a devotee with a mere semblance of devotion take to pure devotion without the qualification of pure faith? In his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, 1866, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur paraphrases Krishna's promise to Arjuna, "By my causeless mercy, I bestow on you the qualification to perform pure devotional service." The reader may reply, "That was fortunate for Arjuna, but Krishna is not personally here to give me pure faith in him." Therefore, Vishnu gives us Krishna's further assurance, "I have also empowered my exclusive Ekantika devotees to bestow the qualification for pure devotion. Do not fear." And then how one gets that pure faith is interesting as well. That's analyzed and broken down in, again, Sudabhati Chintamani. To the degree that the heart is pure, it will develop faith. To the degree that it develops faith, it can realize the Absolute. And to the degree one has transcendental knowledge, one can love Krishna. So I'll just go through that again. The stages are, when the heart is pure, faith comes. From faith, realization, which is transcendental knowledge, and then that transcendental knowledge can turn into love of Krishna. So, read that once more. This is, to the degree that the heart is pure, it will develop faith, and to the degree that it develops faith, it can realize the Absolute, and to the degree one has transcendental knowledge, one can love Krishna. So realizing the Absolute is transcendental knowledge, and then that brings love of Krishna. So for us, we're very fortunate as ISKCON devotees, because we have Srila Prabhupada's book, which is books which are our main nourishment for pure faith. So another interesting thing, actually, we're all here because we love Srila Prabhupada. To one degree or another, we have faith. Srila Prabhupada's a good guy. We're all on the same page. We're all singing from the same song sheet. And then I was thinking, it's such a shame, because when Srila Prabhupada says something, the tendency is you accept. You think, well, Prabhupada's saying it, so, because we have that simple faith in Prabhupada. And then what a shame to have that faith and that love for Srila Prabhupada and not to read his books, or not to seriously read his books. How much you miss out there, because when you access that information, immediately your heart is very open. Prabhupada's saying it, so I'm accepting it. It's very simple, you know. And then if you don't really take advantage of having that, it's such a shame, isn't it? You know, Prabhupada's given so much transcendental knowledge there. And one devotee was saying, what was that he was saying about to the degree that you read Gurudas? You were saying, Shiva Ramaj was saying, to the degree that you... Everyone gets enlightened from reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Yeah. The more you read, the more enlightened you get when you read Srila Prabhupada's books. And there's a few things going on. When you're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada, wherever he is pleased. Oh, this person's taking the time to read the books. So you're getting the blessings that way. Then actually the knowledge itself, the information coming from Nityasiddha, Uttama Bhakta, topmost devotee, is also there as well. So that's also a special benefit of reading the books. Prabhupada's pleased that you're reading the books. He's very realized what he's presenting. And also, you're getting the association of a Ekantika devotee, a general. So in that way, you can get that pure faith. So once you have that pure faith, yeah, you know, Krishna's the supreme, he's the source of everything. all the rivulets are coming and they're very nice, but it's the inexhaustible source of water that I'm especially interested in, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna. So Prabhupada just makes it very simple, and then we just have that simple, pure faith, and then that, from that, we can access so much, so many other things, just from that simple. So we should all encourage each other to dive into Srila Prabhupada's books and study them threadbare. And then if we have a system as well, because you may read something and you think, that is so far out what I've read, and then next week you don't even remember where you read it, you just remember you read something and you remember it was far up, you can't remember what it was. So it's good to write them down. And then when you write them down, you may end up with quite a lot of points. And so then if you number the points, then you can access them, you can index them, and then you can look, you can have like a code, you know, and then you see a particular point, and it's 778, and it's to do with something, in this case this is about factions, and then immediately you can access it and get that information. And it builds up actually as you go along, you just write down all your things that you find the most enthusing, most favorable, as you go on you accumulate lots and lots of nice points. And then they become your astras when you're out there on the having a psychic battle one day with the mind, and the mind decides it's not interested anymore in Krishna consciousness. See, the funny thing about the mind is we joined Krishna consciousness because we wanted to, but the mind didn't get a choice. The mind just got dragged along with us. So when we say, well, we're devotees now, you know, we've taken initiation, we've taken these vows, the mind says, you took the vows. I never took the vows. I never agreed to it. You never asked me. You just dragged me along. And the nature of the mind is, you can't actually preach to the mind, believe it or not. I know you're thinking, well, it's bound to know that I'm thinking of something to say to it. So what's the point? But it's actually, the mind is actually like a kind of docile, kind of, mode of goodness, just goes along with whatever. So you say, if you said to the mind, for instance, an interesting example, you're chanting your rounds, and you pull a bead down, and then you're looking and it's like, I've been chanting for 3/4 of an hour, and I've only done 3 rounds. And he said, no, I must have done at least 5. So you slip down the other 2 beads. and you're like, okay, that was okay. And then the mind says, you didn't chant those rounds. You are so dishonest. You're just deceitful. You know, you said you would do so. Then you put the 2 beads back up. Okay. And then the mind says, but come on, 3/4 of an hour, you must have done more than. So then you put them back down, and then the mind says, you are so deceitful. You are such a rascal. So then the easiest thing to do is, you just put the 2 beads back up again, and you say to the mind, we know we've done 5, but we'll just put 3 there, but we know. And then the mind's like, yeah, okay, yeah, that's good, okay, we know. So now when you preach to the mind, and it's actually, the mind just backs right off, it stops hassling you. So sometimes we forget that the mind needs to be preached to. It needs to be sometimes encouraged. You don't want to do Sankirtan that day and the mind's screaming, I don't want to do this today, I don't want to do it. And so you say, it's okay, look, we'll just come out for an hour, and then after that we can just go shopping. We'll just shop, you know. So after an hour, and then the mind says, we going shopping now? Do you really want to go shopping now? No, well, actually, it's not that bad. So you can trick the mind as well. Because the whole thing about Sankirtan is you're trying to engage people. But the first person you have to engage is your mind, your dear old friend, the mind. So you've got to coax it. You've got to trick it. You've got to give it a cuddle. You've got to tell it things are okay. We're only going to do it for a little period of time. And then after that, you know, and we may meet somebody nice. And then we can have an ice cream. Oh, okay then. So then it goes along with it, you know. And then you trick it, because an hour later, by an hour, you've usually met somebody quite nice on Sankirtan. And that is the break. When people say I broke through, the breaking point is the point at where you meet somebody nice. Because as soon as you meet somebody nice, the mind goes into a different paradigm. And the paradigm is, wow, that guy was really nice. I wonder if there's anybody else who's as nice as that. So it goes into a different. So then how you look at things completely changes. Time starts to flow differently. Your perception of what's going on around you. It's the easiest way to change is to change the way you see something. There was a man once, he was in a train and he was riding home at night, and his favorite part of the night was, it's 5:30, there's no hassle, I'm just reading my book. And there was like 4 or 5 children and they were bumping into him and kicking him and climbing and screaming. And he kept saying to him, I'm not going to get into this. I'm not going to be disturbed. I'm just going to read my... And eventually he said to the father, he says, do you think it would be too much to control your brats of children, please? And the guy says, oh, I'm so sorry. He said, the mother's just died and I just don't know how to deal with the situation. And then the man, the whole paradigm, oh, you poor little angel, climb on me, kick me, jump on my book. So his whole mannerism changed because he saw the situation differently. You see. So you change when you change your paradigm. And the paradigm changes very, very quickly on Sankirtan, because as soon as you meet someone that's nice, yay, suddenly, how long are we out for? Only another 5 hours. And up until then, the paradigm has been, I don't want to be out on Sankirtan. There's a tune that goes with it as well. It's like a kind of very sad, I don't want to be out on Sankirtan. I've got 5 hours, 59 minutes and 30 seconds to go. And so you're thinking it's going to be like that all day. I can't cope with this, you know. Then somebody comes along, they love the books, they give you £50, and then suddenly the whole thing changes. So anyway, hopefully as we become more expert at controlling our minds and developing our pure faith, then it will be easier for us to appreciate what it is that we have and to share that with others. So are there any questions or comments?